Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, you don't understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the 3 teams I've drafted this year, second class candy is pretty good.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Three teams. When was that? 5 minutes after the Super Bowl? Ha ha ha. I'm texting Sigmund Bloom because I think we can't reach him. So hopefully we do. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off again today. Back with me on Tuesday as we hit week 1. In the meantime, I'm not sure if we'll be able to get Sigmund. I sure hope we do. 803-0550 is our number if you want to jump on talking about the culmination of the offseason with the Bills. Of course, with Sigmund, we talk fantasy football, and that's what we try to do a lot on Fridays in the summer, this being the last one. I mean, we're going to do some more of it during the season, of course. It's very popular, but I can try to answer a question or two if you have fantasy questions with drafts. This is the biggest draft weekend of the year. I'm going to come in at around 200. I had a funny conversation with a friend yesterday who asked me how many leagues. I get the question a lot. People know, like, how many leagues? And I say, like, hear me out. Okay, hear me out. It's around 200, but the vast majority, you don't do anything. They're called best ball drafts. So somebody figured out that people love to draft, but can only draft so many because you can only manage so many. There's only so much time in the day, and some of these managed leagues for high stakes are just like you have to get really serious and focus on waivers and just, you know, how to be different when you get to the tournament weeks because you're trying to beat so many different teams to win big money. There's just a lot to think about. It's a lot of work, quote work. So I said, 200-ish, but vast majority, you don't do anything, so it's not as bad as it sounds. And my friend's like, yeah, sure, you know, save it. 200 teams is 200 teams. I brought this up. I was on a podcast on Wednesday night called Ship Chasing. Those of you that are hardcore for fantasy may know it. I'm not sure you would if you weren't. And these guys on that show play, I mean, a lot more than that. And I just don't know how they do it. One of the guys in the group who I know, a friend of mine, these tournaments come up all the time, and I mean they're not all for big money. There are $1,000 tournaments, you know, and that, but some of them are like $3. And they'll let you, if you ever play like FanDuel or DraftKings, DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports, you know that there's like a pretty big number of entries that you're allowed to submit, maybe 150. There's a max, 150 teams. So these guys will play 150 teams. To try to, you know, give them, just like with FanDuel, give themselves the best chance of winning. And I don't know how you can do it. And so what they do is just auto-draft, maybe all of them sometimes, set the rankings the way they want, their own rankings, and then they just auto-draft $3 tournament, 150. It's just out of control. How much volume there is. One of the guys I was talking to said one of their other friends is at 2,000 for the year. 2,000 teams in fantasy football. Mike Dempsey comes on the show. He's way higher than me. So, I mean, it's just sort of like, yeah, it's a lot of money, obviously, but if you can spend it, if you can afford it, and have sort of the patience and the obsessive aspect of it, whatever else, whatever the formula is that would bring you to this level, to bring you to this state, this altered state, just the more entries you have, the better chance of winning. So that's the simple logic of it. No luck with Sigmund Bloom at this point. 803-0550 for your calls. I said earlier I wanted to talk about Josh Allen and the MVP. I'm just flipping through my notebook today, looking for ideas, you know, things we've talked about. It's the end of the offseason, stuff that we've discussed. And I found I had written out one day the last, whatever it is, 12 NFL MVP winners. And so there's a pro and a con argument for Allen's chances this year. He's, of course, been very close. Several years, he's been right up there, just hasn't won. And I think part of the pro argument would be that somebody like that, I think you tend to feel like they deserve one. So if they play at the same high level and no one else is just like obvious, then they might get that vote that year. I don't know how much history, though, there is of that happening. If you remember, this is how we had it with Russell Wilson back when he played with Seattle. I remember Chris Collinsworth one night talking about Wilson. Oh, Sigmund's ready, by the way. He just texted me back. So if we want to do that. He was stuck in traffic. Sorry. We were talking about Russell Wilson one time, or Chris Collinsworth was. He pointed out that Wilson had never gotten an MVP vote. And so the sort of a career achievement award. But the problem with that argument is if you look up the last 11 NFL MVPs, all the way back to 2013 in Peyton Manning when he won his fifth, every one of these players was a quarterback and their team was a top two seed. It's 9 number one seeds and 2 twos in 11 years. Your team's going to have to win big. Allen might be a nice idea. I mean, he's obviously come close, and that other argument's logical, but if the Bills are not 12 or 13 wins and at least the 2 seed, then I think he's in tough. Here is Sigmund Bloom on the Wester Hotline, footballguys.com. Hello, Sigmund.
Fashionably late.
It's just fine. Always excited to have you on, of course. And here we are, Labor Day weekend. Everybody calls this the biggest draft weekend of the year, but not always for the pros. Maybe it is for you. Right. Maybe it isn't. I mean, those of us who've been drafting all summer, it may or may not be the biggest draft weekend for them.
Yeah, it's almost anticlimactic if you've been drafting all summer. It gives you one last opportunity to see how people are reacting to things like Jamar Chase or Kyren Williams as a punt returner. But we've been staring at this stuff for so long that it's going to be great to have actual games to start to test our hypotheses and see what happens. But I know for home leagues, for high stakes leagues, there's still a lot of drafts left.
And in a lot of those tournament leagues, you are playing on hoping to have an edge in the things you're talking about, whatever it is, Ayuk being signed, somebody gets hurt, whatever you think of what the Kyren Williams discourse was this week, how he's going to return punts, which is something I'm choosing to not care about. And then Chase, and you brought up Chase. So is it at the point now a week away where you would move him down, start to worry?
Yes. I think if you're drafting this weekend and you have the 8 pick, the 9 pick, you better have clarity on, you know, do you want A.J. Brown or Jamar Chase? Maybe even 10. Do you want Garrett Wilson or Jamar Chase? Because unlike the Cowboys, who are just a bit hard-headed but eventually come to their senses, or the 49ers, who just want everyone to think they won the negotiation, the Bengals are cheap. Like with a capital C, cheap, the cheapest franchise. And while they did Joe Burrow's deal before his rookie contract was up, it sure seems like they're not going to do Ja'Marr Chase's deal with 2 years left on his rookie contract. And all indications are Chase is willing to take this into the regular season. And it's not just regular season games that he may miss, of course, but it's conditioning and the possibility of injuries early in the season. And I think then it ripples down to, what do you think of T. Higgins? What do you think of Joe Burrow? Maybe moving someone like Andre Ochivas up, giving Mike Gesicki a little more of a chance, because we may be looking at this offense against a New England defense that traded away their best player this offseason in week one.
Yeah, interesting. I haven't thought about this too much for Higgins, but what a potential development for him, as so much of the spring and summer was about whether he would play.
Right.
And then, you know, he's eventually in there on the franchise tag, and if Chase sits, you could do worse than T. Higgins as a number one.
Absolutely. He should be there maybe in the fourth round right now. And ironically, it would be the spendthrift ways of the Bengals that could allow him to have that monster year that he needs going into free agency.
That is ironic. That is an absolutely appropriate use of the word ironically. Sigmund Bloom on the West Hur Hotline. So to put a bow on Chase here, when would you say yes? You mentioned a couple receivers. You have Puka Nacua, London Harrison after that. Would he, in your mind, deserve to fall to round two?
Probably not. I would say Garrett Wilson is where it becomes more difficult. And then if you like Saquon Barkley, if you like Jonathan Taylor, if the hamstring injury didn't scare you off of Jahmyr Gibbs. But I do see from Garrett Wilson to that next tier of wide receivers, there is a clear drop, even though it's just a few picks or maybe the next pick in your draft. I think there's a significant drop in terms of ceiling. And Ja'Marr Chase still has that high ceiling.
Sigmund, so Christian McCaffrey, the consensus number one, there's no reason to need to explain that to anybody. Are you there? I mean, I think Breece Hall and Bijan Robinson, just among the running backs, have very compelling cases. And, you know, I'm happy to draft those guys 2, 3, 4, mixing in with like CeeDee Lamb and Tyreek. But I haven't gotten to the point yet where I'm comfortable putting them at one.
I'm not comfortable putting another running back at one. In point per reception leagues, I am comfortable putting CeeDee Lamb at number one. And the reason is the twofold shadows. It's the calf injury. Okay, we have to pick, Mike, you can pick any player in the entire NFL. How about not a player that is already hurt? But even if you're willing to take that chance, because he got dinged during the regular season last year, he didn't miss a game. He's showing us that he's durable. Trent Williams is still holding out. And Trent Williams is the best player in that offense. He's the most important player in that offense. And the efficiency falls off of a cliff. And he is also, clearly, this has not been one of those hold-ins. This is a true hold-out. And he's willing to take this into the regular season without a doubt. So when you add those two things together, and CeeDee Lamb signs with 2 weeks before the first game, so I think that we shouldn't be too fearful of him having an early season injury because of a lack of conditioning. I think McCaffrey falls to number two. And if Tyreek Hill wasn't having this thumb issue, I would say maybe number three.
And Waddle, by the way, might have a calf thing, speaking of Tyreek Hill as well. So keep close tabs on all this out there if you're drafting this weekend. Sigmund Bloom on the West Hur Hotline. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. He'll be back with me on Tuesday. McCaffrey is such an amazing player, and the great lesson is just not to overreact to, quote, injury-prone, players. As he had a couple of years where people started to write off the possibility of his being a bell cow in fantasy. Last year, a league-leading 339 touches, league-leading 2,023 scrimmage yards, and league-leading 21 combined rushing and receiving touchdowns. Not bad. So be very, studious about injury-prone as a concept.
Oh, I agree. And I think Christian Watson is a player that comes to mind, Mike, where we're going to test that. Because in this case, we might be having to redefine our ideas of injury prone as a label that sticks to a player, because Watson and their cornerback, I think Stokes, went to the University of Wisconsin to have their hamstring issue studied. And, you know, with Watson earlier in the offseason, it was disclosed with something about an imbalance in his muscle mass in his legs. And even if it's just a placebo, even if they just tell Watson, you're not going to have, this has been a wonderfully quiet preseason and camp for Christian Watson. So I think we do have to consider that. And going back to Jalen Waddle really quick, I already mentioned Andre Iosivas, potential number two receiver for the Bengals to open the season. Malik Washington,
yep,
who really came on at the end of the preseason, the sixth-round pick for the Dolphins. They only have four wide receivers, which should make you more interested in Devin Achan in the second round, but should especially make you more interested in Malik Washington in the late rounds, because he looks like he's really ready to go. And I think the story was that Mike McDaniel, I believe, was asking for them to take him for rounds before they finally did take him.
What's here, I'm going to use ironic now, my turn. What's ironic for me is, because I just almost always avoid older running backs, that a guy who led the league in rushing touchdowns this year is really not interesting to me. And that's Raheem Mostert from that team. But you lose that way sometimes. I lost on Derrick Henry for a couple of years because I just didn't want to bet on an older running back.
I think that in fantasy football, you'd rather be a year early than a year late, anticipating that decline for running backs is usually right. And I think we look at Joe Mixon as another player that, unless the Texans showed us that they believe he's still a vital feature back, we are looking at him as someone who's in his decline phase of his career. The Bengals certainly were looking at him that way. So I think you're right. But with Mostert, I'm going to go large, big picture with this one, Mike. I do think that we have overweighted age and injury worries about players. There should be a discount on Cooper Kupp. But a player who was going top five last year falling to the third round, that feels like he's in the clearance bin. There should be a discount on Raheem Mostert. He had about a third round value based on what he did last year. Falling to the eighth round, when Mike McDaniel said in June he is still the leader of that backfield, and going back to what I said, if Devin Achane is as a receiver, if they're looking at him as a receiver, and that's why they feel comfortable carrying only four receivers, that's good for Raheem Mostert. And then I've got to mention a late round pick again, Jalen Wright, the backup running back to both probably Mostert and Achane in Miami. And we know this is going to be the most productive running game in the league.
Very good. All right. To your point about a year too early versus a year too late, Stephon Diggs. So the Bills hope they were right to be maybe early on, you know, trading Diggs. Your thoughts on him and the Texans? Like, he's been about a third round pick, sometimes fourth this year.
And that's too high. That's way too high. He's the number three receiver. I think he's the number three receiver the same way that Keenan Allen is the number three receiver for Chicago. And I might take Allen over Diggs at this point, but I'm pretty sure that somebody's going to take both of them before I would. I think the interesting thing to watch with Diggs, and this could be a net positive for the Bills and potentially a negative for the Texans, we'll see, is that Josh Allen should feel a great weight lifted from his shoulders because he doesn't have to make sure that Diggs is happy. He doesn't have to think about that during games. And now the Texans and CJ Stroud do. So I think we could see an efficiency bump, and we could see just this offense run smoother in Buffalo. And I'll be very interested to see if we have an unhappy Stephon Diggs on the sidelines in Houston the first time he only gets three or four targets in a game.
Diggs has been a first-round pick here in recent years. The first Bills receiver drafted this year, as we get to Labor Day weekend and the end of the summer, is Keon Coleman, usually in the late seventh. You've been you're the first Shakir guy I know, I think of, because we talked after the Bills drafted him. And then, of course, there's Curtis Samuel in there as well. Is this situation for you one of these where, you know, like the Mostert point, the bet isn't too massive, so you want to be in on the Bills and one way or another try to pick up one of these guys?
I think that the Shakir is the one, if you want to get in on somebody, because of the chemistry, because of Curtis Samuel and turf toe. And what really hurts about the turf toe injury is that it is an injury that lingers. It's an injury that doesn't necessarily get better except with rest. And Samuel is the only receiver on that roster that can take the top off of a defense. So your glass half empty take on the Bills is if they can't force defenses to defend that deep part of the passing game, then it's going to be a lot easier to defend everything else. Dalton Kincaid is the other guy, of course, we have to think about as someone that can emerge as a true number one target. But every single time, Mike, every time they talk about the offense, they say everybody's going to eat. I think this is going to be an offense. And it looked like this under Joe Brady last year. Different weeks, different players will take the lead, which I think is a sign of game-to-game game planning, which is what you want, but a nightmare for fantasy football.
Right. You mentioned Christian Watson earlier. Is that the Packers for you, too, or is it different?
Probably. Especially, you know who I like? Here's another late-round pick for you, Tucker Kraft. This is a guy that everybody who's been watching Packers practices over the last week or two say, wow, okay, Tucker Kraft is ready. And he missed the offseason with a pec tear, but he's back. And we saw him last year look like one of the most fun guys to watch after the catch. And he doesn't take much. The bar is so much lower at tight end, so I'm interested in him. But, yeah, I think that Christian Watson is the guy to take for the Packers because he is operating in that deep passing game where it doesn't take much. It doesn't take many targets. If the Packers spread it around, Christian Watson, if targets are coming 20, 30 yards downfield, he doesn't need many targets. And he was starting to return to form with the deep touchdowns last year before he got hurt the second time. So I think Christian Watson is a terrific player to look at around the seventh or eighth round, right there with someone like Jameson Williams. These receivers who could be boom bust options, but when they're your flex or your number three wide receiver, you can tolerate that.
Mm-hmm. Another guy in this context, so Keenan Allen's your wide receiver three in Chicago, Diggs wide receiver three in Houston, with younger options above them. How about Hollywood Brown? Is he somebody you might avoid? Is he number three for you in Kansas City?
He's number three just because now I think today the latest is he's not expected to play in week one. So he's falling. I think you may see him start to be a value at number nine or number 10. I'm sorry, the ninth round or 10th round, because we did see that great chemistry between him and Patrick Mahomes early in camp before he heard that had that sternoclavicular injury. That's a good Scrabble word.
Nice.
And this is a guy who, with Kyler Murray, before he got hurt, before Murray got hurt, looked like a fantasy top 10, top 12 receiver. So it doesn't take much. And I think that just underscores, Mike, the possibility that this is... I know this is.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Bad to be saying to a Buffalo audience. This is a potential revenge tour year for the Chiefs. This is a potential year where the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes really sow their oats, throwing downfield with Xavier Worthy, with Marquise Brown, with Kelce and Rice underneath. So I do think we could see two or even all three of the Chiefs receivers outperform ADP this year.
It's going to sting here if Worthy is a big part of that. I mean, the Bills traded him to Kansas City. So, you know, there's that too. The next time, because I'll think of you the next time my wife lays out clavicular on the Scrabble board and I just drop sterno right on top of it. 15, isn't it 15 by 15? That's just like
perfect.
That'd be the greatest play ever. Which rookie receiver, maybe it's Worthy, I don't know, which rookie receiver will you have the most of?
It's Worthy or Odunze. Really, I'm looking at the sixth round as a good round for both of those guys. And I think in the case of Worthy, we could just see memories of Tyreek Hill come to life where no one can run with him. And that's really scary. And it doesn't take much. I know people are saying, what about Roshi Rice? Hey, six catches for 60 yards in a PPR league is the same as one 50-yard touchdown. And that's Xavier Worthy's calling card. And Odunze, I think you just have the chemistry between him and Caleb Williams. And we thought of, as draft analysts, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze as pretty close in terms of prospects. Yeah. Any of them would have been the number one wide receiver in a lot of drafts, maybe even the number one pick in some drafts. Odunze is falling 3-4 rounds after Harrison and Nabers, I guess, on expected volume, which is reasonable, but that is a massive gap. When the talent gap is not that large, I like taking Odunze.
I love that. I love betting on the rookies. You know, it's often enough that they just show up and, oh yeah, they're great. I heard they were great. I knew they were young. I was scared to pick them, but don't be scared to pick them. I'm with you on that. Which quarterback will you have the most of?
Probably Jaden Daniels.
There it is.
And I may regret it because I had most Anthony Richardson last year, and I did regret it because it's the injury concern. But Jaden Daniels, his floor is Justin Fields. That's his floor for fantasy. If he is just a reasonably effective passer for a rookie, we're looking at a potential top five quarterback. Although, on the subject of Odunze and Keenan Allen, I am starting to wonder if we've been underrating Caleb Williams. And if Caleb Williams actually is the guy that's going 11th, 12th in drafts, opening up against Tennessee and their new-look secondary. We always like to pick on Tennessee. I have a feeling Caleb Williams is going to be one of the players that is getting headlines after week one.
Love it. Sigmund, it's been a great summer. I hope it's been one for you. Any final thoughts or questions for me?
No, are you enjoying now? I feel like you are firmly in the rain trust of fantasy football. How does it feel?
I'm kind of blown away. And you're my origin story. You're a part of it. I'm kind of blown away that I get this sort of, like, I guess, respect or credibility. Yeah. You know what I need to do now? Win. Right? Like, I get invited into stuff that you're in sometimes, and I feel like I'm doing about as well as I can do in that area. But you need to win, too. That helps.
Hey, it's still about the friends we make along the way.
That's right. As long as you're just not drowning in, leagues and whatever else. Thank you, Sigmund. I'm glad we were able to reach you.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
Sigmund Bloom, Football Guys. And I forgot to ask him the one running back question. Oh, he's gone. Right now, I think I'll have time in this break. A caller last hour said, how does the strategy change if your league only starts one running back? And I'm going to go test that if I have time to do it here on the Football Guys app. 803-0550. Fantasy, great. It's that time of year. You know, for some of us, it always is. But maybe it is for you. And last call for overall Bills predictions, vibes, as we get to the end of the offseason. Next week, we'll start getting into the game and injuries and everything else, point spreads, all that fun stuff, guests, Ross Tucker, Joe Ostrowski, etc. We still have today, or what's left of it, to kind of call our shots for this year. There's been a lot of doubting with the Bills this year, or at least compared to recent years. And as we get to the end here, has that sunk in, or has that sort of reached you, or have you been able to resist it? Anything? 803-0550. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
Ultimately, I started watching some more of their tape. I don't think the O-line played as good as we thought it did. There were some issues there last year. I think this could be problematic. We've already talked about C.J. Stroud ad nauseum on the show about how he got away with a lot. The more I watch his tape, the more I actually leave a little bit less impressed than I was the last time. And I don't know how that's possible. Still good. Still good for a rookie, for sure. All that said, I'm not sure they're the offensive juggernaut they're being billed as. And I know for the fantasy people listening too, like, we've been scooping up all these parts. Like, oh, you just want to have pieces of this offense. I'm not sure it's that simple.
Interesting take. That is Brett Whitefield, who co-hosts with Joe Marino sometimes at Fantasy Points. Not so high on the Texans. Houston, 10-7 last year, but out of nowhere. Stroud, fabulous as a rookie. And they are the AFC South favorite this year. They open at Indianapolis. Remember talking about this a lot when the schedule came out, how AFC South, NFC North, quote, rivalries are just almost like non-existent. right? I mean, what's an interesting matchup that you can remember ever between an NFC North team, Chicago, Detroit, Green Bay, Minnesota, and an AFC South team? I have a tough time thinking of a single game between any of those teams. But the point is, this year, the quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, Goff, they're excellent, Love, excellent, could have been McCarthy, but it's Darnold, then Stroud, Richardson, Lawrence, and Levis. Like, varying degrees of, you know, super young, proven or almost proven or unproven. It just makes for great matchups. This was talked about when we had guests from Chicago and brought this up, or other people brought this up. Here by quarterback is Caleb Williams' schedule in his rookie year with the Bears. Levis, Stroud, Richardson. That's his first three games, AFC South games. The week two game with the Texans is on Sunday night. Levis, Stroud, Richardson, Stafford, Bryce Young. I mean, that writes itself. How Carolina makes the trade up with Chicago, which has Justin Fields, to draft Bryce Young. Now, they're just mired. Who knows if it gets better, but a miserable rookie year. They play the Bears in Chicago with fancy new Caleb Williams. Lawrence is week six. That's a London game. After the bye, Daniels. Look at what is happening here with Caleb Williams. This schedule is amazing. Daniels, Kyler Murray, Drake May, probably, by week 10. So Williams will face the other top three quarterbacks right there in the middle of the season in Daniels and May. Jordan Love, Darnold. I hate to say it that way, but that could have been McCarthy. Goff, Purdy. That's good. First overall pick versus last overall pick. Darnold again, Goff again, Geno Smith, and then Love again. Wow, they don't play a division game, Chicago, until week 11. It's annoying to me that the Bills and Patriots don't meet until week 16. Annoying isn't the right word. It shouldn't happen that way. I've said this for many years. I know the schedule, you know, people talk a lot about how it gets made. Sal has his guy there, Mike North, who gives him insight that Sal shares with us on how the schedule gets made. But I think there should be ways to do it better. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, it's easy to say something like that, but I am a schedule geek. Like, I write schedules. I write a schedule for a 32-team fantasy league that I'm in. Like, I'm the guy who does that. In baseball leagues, call Mike. He'll write the schedule. I enjoy that. It's something that my brain likes to do. It's like a puzzle, you know? If I were into this more, I'd maybe write crossword puzzles. That's the kind of thing my brain likes. So the schedule for me, it should never happen that you play a team twice in 3 weeks. The division game should always be spread out, and I don't think this should be impossible, where you play each of your division opponents once in the first half and once in the second half. It's just, you could really get a good or bad draw this way. One thing about thinking the Bills in New England, you know, right now, what does it sound like? The Patriots. The coach kind of talked himself into a corner. He said that May was better, that he outplayed Jacoby Brissett in the preseason, at camp, all of it, but that Brissett will be the starter. And the reason they're doing that is that it seems like the offensive line and the whole offensive situation is in such shambles that even though you'd want to, all else equal, you'd want to play the rookie right away to examine him and just let him get better, but they're still, and he outplayed the veteran, but they're still not doing it because it's like too dangerous. Too much could go wrong, psychologically, physically. So May doesn't start. I don't really even think it's a bad call. He did say the thing about May outplaying Brissett, which, you know, kind of leaves you to wonder just, all right, what are we doing here? But I always want to play the rookie in New England right now. I don't want to criticize it because maybe it's going to be that bad. Well, the Bills, okay, the Bills play them December 22nd and then again 2 weeks later. I don't want to exactly go as far as to say that's not fair. Maybe it isn't. You know, you'd like a New England game pretty early, maybe. Maybe they get right. And if May is good, and I think people are talking like he looks like he is, late in the season, that's more just more dangerous of an opponent. And to play them twice at the end when the Dolphins and the Jets will have already played them by then, I think. Week 17, New England plays the Chargers. So that will their games against the Dolphins and the Jets will be over by then, and the Bills will play them twice. Doesn't have to be bad. It's just, it's. I think it would be more fair if you never had that happen. The Giants and Eagles did this a year or two ago, two games together right at the end of the season. And I don't know, like, why would the NFL not be able to avoid that? Paul Hamilton will join me at 5. He's been around the Bills a lot this summer. The Sabres are coming up. And, of course, the devastating story about Johnny Gaudreau and his brother Matthew. Just unbelievable. I'm not sure if Paul has spent any time with Gaudreau. Maybe when he was a rookie or prospect. He played at Boston College, was a great college hockey player, was a very good, if not great, NHL player who is now dead at 31, his brother at 29. Awful story. So Paul's coming up at 5. Lines are open now at 803-0550. I did bring up and got into a little bit before we reached Sigmund Bloom, Josh Allen and the MVP. If you've got a take on that quickly, we'll do that. I'll probably get back to that for a few minutes here before Paul comes on. This is Mike Shope on WGR. No NFL action this weekend. Week 1, opening Thursday night in Kansas City. But that's okay. Premier League, college football, of course. It's their time to shine. Monday, by the way, the Premier Lacrosse League semifinals. That's on Labor Day afternoon. I think 4-6 or 4-7 are those games. I may be watching that. It is Labor Day weekend. There's a better chance I'll be on the grill or somewhere outside with family, but that'll be something I want to remember on Monday, PLL. Labor Day weekend, then school. My son starts Tuesday, my daughter Wednesday. Labor Day is kind of funny because of that. Different than, well, actually not. I was going to say different than Memorial Day because, you know, you're at the beginning of summer, but you're, of course, not yet at the beginning of summer, just the unofficial, and there is school the next day. For some reason, that should be the end. Move school up a month. July, we are flying around all over, now with teenagers who play sports. Every weekend, my wife goes somewhere with my daughter. I go somewhere with my son. She's in Toronto. I'm in Maryland. Then I'm at UMass, and then she's at Princeton. I mean, it's wonderful, and this is not a complaint, but it's just that July is very busy, and there are these tournaments and all kinds of different things always happening. If your son or daughter is into baseball, you know how that is. Same thing. You're just always on the road, and, you know, those are long weekends. August, nothing. I mean, literally nothing. My son was telling me today, he plays lacrosse, how he went to a camp right at the back end of that season in July and has not had even like a practice or anything since, like in a month. So why can't they go to school then? And then you get out at Memorial Day when it's also 80 and sunny, and then you have June. June would be a better month for this kind of, to sort of spread out some of that. Plus they're playing, I mean, we're playing these out-of-state schools a lot, and those kids do have that calendar. There were Florida teams at a tournament he played at, and not that that matters for the sake of the tournament, but I'm just saying, I just think that would be better. I'm sure there are smart people who will defend why it is this way. Didn't it start with, like, kids had to work on the farm and help with the crops? So that was August, and then school had to start in September because the kids were needed to do manual labor. Not that that still isn't the case in some places, but my kids' manual labor is like Fortnite. I mean, let's get going here. So Labor Day, like a little bit Memorial Day, that's not the first day of school. Labor Day, this is the first day of school. Labor Day is a little bit, I think, maybe for the kids, maybe just for the family, a little bit different. Like you don't enjoy yourself quite to the same extent because everybody's getting ready for tomorrow. You've just gone, whatever it is, 10 weeks. They're teenagers, so they sleep in. Monday night, get to bed way earlier than they will have for a long time. And then we get up 6 a.m. on Tuesday. Here we go, day one. Last hour, a caller asked, in a fantasy draft, is strategy different with respect to running back when you only start one? He's in a league where you only start one, have to start one. Then there's flex positions. I did some research on that best as I could here between talking. And I think the caller, I think, said, or am I overthinking it? And I think I want to say yes. I don't really believe in overthinking. It's good to think about things. It's a good question. You'd want to know if the strategy were different. I don't think it really is. And I think maybe that's partly because running back two is the least valuable position in fantasy, if not tight end. Because running backs get hurt all the time, and there's timeshares, and they're just like, the running backs don't matter thing is just, you have only a very limited amount of running backs who will play like all the time, like McCaffrey does. Breece Hall. I don't even know if Bijan is one of these guys. He may not be. Jonathan Taylor is. Barkley might be. You know, those are like the best guys to get just in a vacuum. And then running back two, you know, who is it going to be if you're drafting receivers, you know, competently? You could get to like a Tony Pollard or somebody like that. He's okay. That's kind of how I want to build my teams, is running back two is my last consideration. So is the if the format is you only start one, that player goes away, doesn't really matter. I'm not sure if I think his name was Derek. I'm not sure if Derek is still listening, of course. There's no way for me to know that. But hopefully he is, so he can finally get to my answer on that. I have a couple of minutes here. I said I would mention the Josh Allen MVP conversation. So he's one of the favorites. Why yes, why no? Why yes is he's been so good and he hasn't won. You've got Mahomes with two. You've got Jackson with two. Maybe they'll be to break ties. Allen's turn kind of thinking. That's why yes. Also why yes would be Diggs is gone. And if he puts up the same kind of stat line, he's going to get more credit for it than he has. Unless it's like Keon Coleman is so unbelievably good. I don't think that'll... I think no matter what happens, really, Allen will get more credit for the same numbers than last year or the years before because Diggs is gone. Diggs was seen as, correctly, I believe, is so vital to Allen's success. So that's why yes. Why no? Because the Bills probably, almost definitely, will have to win at least 12 games and get the one seed in a conference with Mahomes and Jackson and Burrow and Stroud now and others, Aaron Rodgers if you want him. In a conference like that with all these other MVP caliber quarterbacks, this is what happened last year. Who wins? Jackson won. Jackson didn't have his best stat season, but his team was much the best, and he won. He got 49 out of 50 votes. So as much as people want to say, I'm not sure this is all MVP voters, that, you know, quarterback wins are not a quarterback stat, that kind of stuff, don't overreact to a quarterback's win-loss record or even necessarily care about it at all. These MVP awards do care about that. I had the stat earlier. Last 11 years, all quarterback winners, all either a one seed or a two seed, one team whose quarterback won it, Atlanta with Matt Ryan, went 11-5. Four others, 12-4 or 13-4. Everybody else, 13-3 or better. Hey, if the Bills do that, Allen's going to win the MVP. If they get the one seed, he'll probably win the MVP, not knowing what happens in the NFC. But if he doesn't, if they win 11, if they go 11-6, which is still over their win total, I think someone else wins, no matter about Diggs or any of those other points. Paul Hamilton joins me after sports. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.